Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. On today's show, we're going to jump into the time capsule. Yeah, we're going to jump into a time capsule because mine works. My time capsule works. But I will tell you this, it is severely limited. Let me tell you how my time capsule works. It will actually take me back to a place in time that I've actually visited, I've actually experienced. Now, it will not take me to any other place in my past that I've never experienced. That's the limitation to my time capsule. Okay, my time capsule is really my memory. Yeah, it's my memory. And I was going down memory road, memory lane, whatever you want to call that. And I was lamenting over the weekend about how, over time, my beautiful bride and I transitioned from being renters of real estate to a point where we actually pulled the trigger and we bought our first property together. We did. Now, this property was not purchased to be investment property. This was property that we purchased so that we could have a home together, because we were going to follow the American dream. I mean, that's that part of the American dream. Part of the American dream is, okay, let's go back to FDR days. A chicken in every pot. You remember that? Some of you guys remember that. The chance to pursue wealth, fame, and fortune. The opportunity to own your own piece of America, whether that's, you know, a piece of raw land, whether that's a house, whether that is a massive mansion overlooking the Pacific Ocean on 1,000 acres. Yeah, those things are out there, believe it or not. I can't afford them. Well, not yet. So let me tell you where my time machine, aka my memory, took me to. It took me to a place called Fontana. And you're thinking, Fontana, that sounds kind of familiar. Is that in California? Well, you are correct. Fontana is a part of the Inland Empire of California. Now, geographically, where does it really sit? It sits east of Los Angeles. It sits, I'd say, northwest of Riverside. And it is just below the Cajon Pass in California. Cajon Pass is this very windy, windy stretch of interstate, which takes you out of the Southern California basin up through the first range of mountains, and it gets you into the desert highland. Yeah, it's actually a pretty cool place. And I bought a house literally at the base of that pass in a place called Fontana, California. This was, at the time, this was my dream home. This was an opportunity for me to do something for my beautiful bride, and of course myself, because yeah, I was going to live there too. Oh, and there was something else going on. You see, my wife was pregnant with our first child. Now, let me just frame everything that happened, which caused us to go and do this thing. I had been stationed up in Northern California. I was doing some various things for the Army. We won't get into that stuff, but I got a transfer order. I got a reassignment order that took me from Northern California to Southern California. And the military, we call that a PCS move, or a permanent change of station move. What that means is the Army has basically decided that you're done doing whatever you were doing wherever you're at, and you need to go do something else in the new location. Now, the military is gracious because, you know, they know that you're probably going to have to move your stuff, your household goods. So they agree to pay to move your household Because trust me, if I had to do it myself, I would have gone bankrupt. Yeah, we had a lot of stuff. So the military moves you, and you know, if you're lucky, most of your stuff arrives there unbroken. Yeah, those of you that have had PCS moves, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So we moved out of a place in the Bay Area. Now, I was renting up there. I was renting. We actually lived in two different places. We lived in one place that was right off the, I'm going to mispronounce it, Carquinez Straits. It's been a long time since I've lived there, which is basically where the water from the bay flows from. Yeah, when it comes in from the Sacramento River systems, it flows through the Carquinez Straits. And we lived in a house that was on a peninsula that jutted out into those straits. It was a nice, nice home. And back in the day when we lived there, we were actually renting from somebody that had bought the home to live in. And oh, by the way, back in that time frame, I mean, we're going back to the mid-90s. Real estate markets in Northern California were not doing very good. Now, there were some issues out there. And as a matter of fact, the builder that was building this subdivision went under. So we basically lived in a subdivision with like a little cul-de-sac with six houses on it that were all occupied. We were the only renters. Everybody else owned their property. And then for the rest of the subdivision, you had streets, you had sidewalks, you had lots, and then, you know, as you got farther away from our cul-de-sac and deeper into the development, you started seeing slabs with framing on it and maybe partial exteriors done. And then you get a little farther down, then you see slabs with maybe just the wood on it. And then you get a little farther down, you'd see like the slabs with plumbing in it. So, what I'm framing for you is the picture of a developer going bust. And because that neighborhood looked the way it did, I actually was able to rent a very nice piece of property on a very expensive piece of land. I think we spent like $2,000 a month for that property. Yeah, but it was really nice. It was everything my wife wanted. It was everything that I wanted. It was everything that we needed until the owner of the property decided he didn't want to be a landlord anymore, and it was time for us to sell. Oh, wait a minute. We didn't own the property. We were residents. Oh, my goodness. So what do we do? When we come back from the break, I'll tell you.
The other thing I think people hear landlord or property owner, and they think of Donald Trump and other multi-billionaires that own real estate, and that's not who the vast majority of owners across the nation are. The typical owner of a rental property owns just a couple properties, and they're people just like me and you.
You can own single-family houses and apartments, too. We'll show you how. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com. Join our national network of rental owners.
I don't know which one bums you out more, the little wheel, you get in the little wheel and run, or the cubicle. Go to your prison cubicle. Think about being in prison every day. What do you do? You get up every day and stand in your cubicle. Maybe sit in your cubicle. What do you do when you go to work every day? Go to the cubicle. Whew. I couldn't put up with it when I was there. I had to get out.
Ready to get out too? Learn how at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. It's time to turn up the volume and fine-tune your passive income plan so you can create the lifestyle you've always wanted.
Welcome back to the show. All right, I got a little long-winded in the last segment, so let me condense my story down, because if I don't do that, I'm never going to get everything that I'm trying to tell you across to you. So let me sum up our Northern California experience on that particular tour. We had moved into a neighborhood that I received, in my opinion, a very good rental value for the property. I think I paid, I don't know, maybe it wasn't $2,000, but whatever it was back in the day, it was kind of a stretch based on my budget, but I was willing to do it for the location of the property. Now, the drawback to this neighborhood, well, it was in a neighborhood where a builder had gone bust. The builder had gone bust. So as a result of that, I was able to get a pretty good price point on rent because the guy that had bought the property, who intended to move into it because he was working closer to San Francisco and was supposedly being transferred, well, he bought the property and then wound up not being transferred, and that's why the property came available for rent. Okay, so the neighborhood, it kind of looked like Mogadishu without the bullet holes. I mean, there's no other way to describe it, but it was a beautiful location. You could walk to the end of the neighborhood and you could look out over the entire Straits. I mean, it was just gorgeous. Well, about a year into living there, another builder came along and bought the property. I don't know how it transacted. Don't really care. All I know is that all of a sudden, building started to commence. So at the very end of the neighborhood where the common areas were, there was supposed to be a pool and a clubhouse and things like that that had never been built. All of a sudden, these things are being built because now this neighborhood's going to come back alive. So the guy that owned the house contacted me, and I think we had just signed a lease for the second year. I'm pretty sure we were past the one-year mark. Anyhow, we get like 1 or 2 months into this new lease period, and he tells me that he's going to put the house up for sale. He realizes that he doesn't want to be a landlord. He sees that the market is kind of bouncing back, and he thinks that this is his time to strike and get out of the way. And I said, okay, that's cool. I said, who are you going to sell it to? And he said, well, whoever wants to buy it. Now, in the back of my mind, I know that I have a lease in place. I know that he can't force me out of that property, even if he sells it. And if he sells it, he's most likely going to sell it to another investor, even though he decided he wasn't an investor and didn't want to do those sorts of things, which is fine. It's not for everybody. I get that. So in our conversations, I said, okay, well, you're probably going to sell to an investor, and you know, then he wants to negotiate with me as far as viewing the property. And now I'm starting to get a little agitated with the guy, to be honest with you, because number one, he doesn't know how to sell investment property, because that's not how you do it. You put the deal together first, subject to inspection, and then you waste my time. You don't have people traipsing through the property while I'm living there because the lease said you have to give me a 24-hour notice. Anyway, I know my rights. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's actually been a pretty decent guy. I'm not picking on this guy. I don't remember the guy's name. He's actually a pretty decent guy. He was just trying to do what he needed to do to get out from underneath that property because he was living somewhere else. And, you know, when I looked up what he paid for the property and then I assumed, you know, took a look at what he was probably paying for principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, I knew he was underwater and that I was getting a really good deal. All right. Let's make this story a bit shorter. I realized I could have stayed in that property for another, 10 months on the lease? I could have done that. But I also knew that maybe it was better to just leave because at a certain point, I'm going to be moving anyhow. And here's the problem I have. The military is not going to move me out of that house into another property. No, that's on me. The move requirement did not occur because the military said you got to go somewhere. No, the move requirement occurred because the guy that owned the house decided he wanted to sell the property. And to be honest with you, I decided, you know what? If you'll let me out of the lease, I'll be out of here in 60 days subject to finding another property. Well, we found another property in a different part of where we were living. And we actually liked that area just as nice. Now, it wasn't on the water, but it was up against a green belt with trees and stuff. It was just a beautiful area up there. So we moved into that property. Ironically, we were renting from somebody that took a job in another part of the Bay Area, and they had to go. Okay, so again, I'm working with first-time landlords that don't know what they're doing. Okay, let's make this long story short right now. The military said, we're reassigning you. And this occurred probably in 1997, I would say somewhere around like September, with the reassignment date of January 1st of 1998. Yeah, I was lucky to get that much lead notice, believe it or not. So I gave my landlord notice. I looked at my wife, who was already significantly pregnant at that point with our firstborn, who was not born yet, and I knew I was going to Southern California on my next assignment. And then my wife and I decided, you know what? Let's buy a property. Let's see if we can buy a property. So we went down to Southern California. We found this particular house in Fontana. I bought it brand new, brand new. We were the first people to walk into it. And I remember during the qualification process, now as we're getting close, now get this. I closed escrow on this property in January of 1998. My son was born in February of 1998. As part of the lender requirements, my wife had to maintain a job until we closed on the property. But she was also getting very, very, very pregnant. So she left Northern California to go live with her aunt in Pasadena and was able to take a temporary job so that we had the income that we needed to show the lender so that we could close on the house. And in January of 1998, I moved Mrs. Gordon and myself and my almost born son into our brand new house. That house, back in 1998, I paid, let me get this number here because I've got this number right in front of me. I think it was $142,000. I'll get the actual number on the values. But yeah, I think it was $142,000. Pretty good price point back then. Now, we'll also tell you, interest rates were a lot higher. So that meant that it was a little bit more difficult to qualify. But we were able to qualify, and we moved into that home. We loved that home. We enjoyed that home. As a matter of fact, both of my children were born not in that home, but while we lived in that home. Yeah, there it is. So January 13th, 1998, I paid $142,500 for that house. Yeah. 3 years later, I had to sell. Now, let me frame this for you. It was a good thing, and it was a bad thing. I'll tell you more when we come back.
Del Wamsley on the economy and politics.
What happens if the economy turns around and goes back down now the Democrats are in power, or inflation becomes rampant and all of a sudden it becomes very difficult to do business? I was listening to an economist the other day, and he pulled out this chart of GDP. He said, look, here's what I want you to do. He said, tell me anywhere from 1950 to 2021 where the Democrats took power and where the Republicans took power. He said, point it out for me. And the truth of the matter is you can't tell.
If you're sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what the politicians are going to do, or waiting to see what the economy is going to do, if you're trying to predict the future, stop. Politicians and the economy have no bearing on your success or failure. Only you do. Register for the next live online free workshop. We'll unfold the map to retirement in 5 years or less, regardless of what's going on in the world. It's the same proven strategies we've been using for 30 years through every political party and economic cycle you can think of. Register at LifestylesUnlimitedWorkshop.com.
We're back with the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We're here to answer your questions and help you become financially free.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, so what I'm doing, I got a little bit delayed here. I was messing around with a spreadsheet, and I wasn't doing a good job of working it out, but it's all worked out. So let's talk about that house that I bought my beautiful bride. 3.5 years later, I sold that house. I sold it to a husband and wife that really loved the house. Now, along the way, we had put a pool in the backyard, and we did landscaping the back, and we did like a patio cover and some concrete and stuff. I mean, because when you buy these houses new, they put in a little bit of a front yard, like a patch of grass, and the backyard, you get like a, well, you know what I'm talking about. You get like a 4x4 piece of concrete right outside the back door, so you have something to step on when you come out of the house. And beyond that, it's just dirt. So I think we spent, I don't know, another $35,000 to improve the property, and then probably a couple grand here and there to do, you know, other things that we wanted to do. So When it came time to sell, I was actually a little nervous. I was a little nervous that maybe we had over-improved this property and that maybe we weren't going to get our money back. I was very nervous about it. But we also knew that we did not want to be landlords. And I was not in a position where I was willing to leave my VA entitlement, yeah, the one I'm using to buy my property in Texas, I was not willing to leave my VA entitlement locked up in that property because we were moving to another place and we intended to buy property there. And we wanted to use the VA to do it because we didn't have, you know, bags of cash laying around. Although we did get some bags of cash out of this property when we sold it. So I sold this thing for like $214,000. Where is it? Yeah, $214,500. That's what I sold the property for. And when the dust all settled, you know, once you take out our loan that we had to pay off and our other loan we had to pay off because I didn't pay all cash for that pool. I financed it, right? And I actually got some money back at the close of escrow. You know what I did with that money? I used it to pay off consumer debt that I had. Yeah. Because back in those days, especially after my wife stopped working, we didn't have her income streams anymore. So we had to get by on just my income. And when it was just us, that was pretty easy. But then we brought one baby into the world, and then we brought another baby into the world. So now we got two little kids living at home, you know, and kids can be expensive. Yeah, so, you know, we started leaning on credit card debt and stuff, or we'd have an emergency and we'd put it on a credit card. Yeah, so the majority of that money that came from the sale of the house we used to eliminate consumer debt. So at the end of the day, that's what we got. Now, I want to tell you the story of the people that bought that property from me. Yeah, because that's really where I'm going at. I'm really going there because this is a perfect example to talk about what happens to real estate pricing over a period of time. You see, 20 years ago today, okay, 20 years and a month ago, almost a month ago, let's just call it 20 years. Can we be okay with that? 20 years ago, a husband and wife bought this property from me. And they lived in it, and they enjoyed it. Now, according to the tax records, something happened to that family. Yeah, the woman was taken off the title and was replaced with the man's name. Now, I don't know why. I don't know why. It could have been a death. I mean, that's very possible. Something terrible may have happened to their family, or it could have been a divorce. I mean, those things happen, and maybe part of the divorce decree was that he gets the house and she gets whatever she gets. I don't know. I don't know. But here's what I do know. I looked at Zillow. Yeah, I looked at Zillow over the weekend as I was, you know, using my memory as my time capsule. And Zillow's estimate for this particular house, $608,700. Yeah, you heard me correctly. $608,700. Now, the gentleman that's still, as far as I know, owns and occupies the house, I don't believe it's a rental property. Could be, but I don't think so. The tax records have the tax bill going to that property. The tax records do not show any other change of ownership other than taking the woman off and replacing it with the man. So I'm thinking this person has lived there ever since they bought it from me. Yeah, and to be honest with you, I'm looking at some of the pictures, you know, because Zillow uses, I guess, Google cameras. You know, they drive around neighborhoods. Okay, the front yard's a little different than the way we left it, but it looks very, very good. It looks like they added a little concrete on the front because there was a grass patch, and, you know, now there's like a third driveway there. So other than that, the house looks like it's in great shape. Somebody put solar panels on it. Okay, so at the end of the day, if this guy were to decide that he's going to move away, he's going to walk away, he's going to sell the property, he could get $608,400 for this property. Yeah. Now, here's the interesting thing. This property has created a lot of equity for this guy. I mean, if you think about it, when he paid $214,500 back in the day, I don't remember what kind of, I think he came in with a conventional loan, so I'm assuming he put maybe 20% down, possibly put 5 or 10% down, paid some mortgage insurance premium. I don't remember the transaction. It was 20 years ago. But Zillow estimates that the loan balance on this property is about $81,000, call it $82,000. So if you go with Zillow's numbers, this guy's got like $527,000 worth of equity sitting in his house. That's a lot of equity. Here's what I know about that house. This guy, there's no other recorded notes against this house. The only note that's there is that original note that was created back in the day. So this guy is house rich. And he's cash poor. The guy may have money flowing out of his pockets for all I know. But here's my point. $525,000 sitting in a property, not doing anything except just sitting there, marinating while the California markets heat up. Yeah. To me, that's a huge mistake. To me, that's a huge opportunity cost. And it's a lost opportunity at that. It is, because he could take a big portion of that money out of that property. I mean, he could sell the property and he could walk away. And I estimate that if he did that based on, you know, an 8% cost of sale, and let's just assume Zillow has got the number right for what the property is worth, it might actually be worth more for all I know. But I'm thinking if he sold the property and walked away, he would have about $485,000 burning a hole in his pocket. That's a lot of money. Now, he might have some tax implications, because the way the IRS deals with capital gains on your principal residence, as long as you've lived in it for two of the last 5 years and you sell it, you don't have to pay capital gains taxes on the first $250,000 worth of capital gains. If you're married, that goes to $500,000. Wait a minute. She's not on the deed anymore. We come back. More on this.
Lifestyles Unlimited invites you to the world's largest wealth and passive income expo, September 3rd and 4th, Irving, Texas. You'll connect with successful investors and industry experts. Learn being real estate retired at any age. Attend breakout sessions with industry experts. Learn from real people successfully investing in real estate right now. Leave with your passive income plan in hand. The entire Lifestyles Unlimited team of realtors, mentors, educators, and operational consultants want to meet you Friday and Saturday, September 3rd and 4th in the Metroplex Irving Convention Center, Las Colinas. Join thousands of top investors and multimillionaire real estate investor Dell Wamsley. Dell is mentor to top award-winning investors across the country. Go to WealthAndPassiveIncomeExpo.com. Enter promo code FREEDOM and receive $97 off any pass or package. That's WealthAndPassiveIncomeExpo.com. Promo code FREEDOM. WealthAndPassiveIncomeExpo.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Now, let's get back to your map to financial freedom.
Welcome back to the show. All right, so let's get into the numbers. Let's talk about this person's situation. I mean, the last time I met this person was actually never. Actually never. I never have seen this person face to face. I recognize the name because the name was on the contracts. When that person came to look at the house, I was at work. When that person came to do the inspections, I was at work. When that person did the closing, I didn't do my closing when they did their closing. My broker handled everything for me. As a matter of fact, I remember leaving all the keys and everything with my broker as we had just had the movers leave our house and cleaned it all out, and we moved on down the road. So this particular person has lived in my old house, the house that I built for my wife, Tina, And I am super excited that they loved that house so much that he's lived there for the last 20 years. It tells me that, you know, that's a good thing. Here's the other good thing. Real estate values do tend to double in value every 20 years. That is statistically proven. Now, places like Southern California, this particular home in question that I'm talking about, that is not a true statement. No, it's not, because this property did not double in value over 20 years. It almost tripled in value over 20 years. I mean, that's the insanity of what goes on in the California markets. Not every California market is like that. You got to look far and wide to find the ones that aren't, but they're very few and far between. The majority of properties in California tend to appreciate. So you might be thinking, wow, this guy's sitting on a pile of cash, and maybe that's this guy's retirement strategy. Maybe he figures he'll stay there for 10 more years. The property will eventually pay off. He won't have a principal and interest payment anymore. I mean, he's 20 years into the loan, assuming he didn't do any refinancing. And I didn't see anything on any place where I looked. Now, I don't necessarily have super sleuth skills. Maybe there's something out there I don't know about. But I'm pretty convinced this guy's been hanging out on the property for 20 years. And somewhere along the line, about 4 years into buying it, after from me, the woman in the equation left the equation. We don't know why. I'm not going to call this guy up and ask him. Not going to do that. So it begs the question, what about the capital gains taxes? If the guy sold the property today, and he could, I think it would clear about $485,000. Now, I don't have all the intimate knowledge. And to be honest with you, I don't know what the condition is inside the house. I'm assuming he takes as good of care as the inside as he does the outside, which is what we did. But if he clears $485,000 from the sale of this house, he needs to talk to a tax professional to find out if he can take the full $500,000 capital gains avoidance that the government gives you. Otherwise, about half of that gain is going to be subject to capital gains taxes. That's the way it is. Now, there's another course of action he could take. Maybe he doesn't want to sell this house. I mean, think about it. Guy's lived there for 20 years. That guy knows more about what's going on in that house than I ever did, because he's been there 20 years. So maybe he's willing to tap into the equity. Now, the wild, wild west days back before the 2008 meltdown in the subprime markets that caused the whole real estate implosion, back before then, in California, of all places, you could take out home equity lines of credit up to 100% of the value of your property. That's right. So if you had a property that was worth $600,000 in today's market and you had a $100,000 loan on it, in the old days, you could take out a $500,000 loan literally against that property. You could leverage it up to 100%. There were also times that occurred in the early 2000s where you could leverage up to 125%, especially in California, because the prices were going up so crazy fast, the lenders figured, We're good. We'll get covered. We'll be all right. And we know how that turned out. In today's lending environment, now I might be wrong. I am not. I don't have a license to sell you mortgages or anything like that. I only know, based on what I read and the research that I do, I'm pretty confident that lending refinance rates are capped at 80% loan to value nowadays. And that's a fallout of all that mess that occurred, because that's the kind of stuff people were doing to get money to over leverage properties, to go buy other stuff. Sometimes they bought property, sometimes they just bought stuff, and everything just fell apart. So the government said, okay, we got to go back to the old way of doing business. All right, so this guy, let's say he takes out an 80% loan to value home equity line. Now, maybe he decides not to mess with that first mortgage. I mean, you think about it, he's paid it down for 20 years. I mean, at this point, really, the majority of what he's paying for his payment is going to principal reduction. Yeah, and that might be the path that he's on. But he could pull out the difference. In other words, he could pull out about $405,000 out of that property. Now, his cost to live there will go up because there is a cost associated with buying that money. And again, I don't know what this guy's credit rating is. I don't know what the money will cost you. But I will tell you, based on a quick look that I did before the show, indicated that there's money out there for around 3% on refis. So I'm not saying that this guy could qualify for 3%, but there's 3% money out there. So one of the things that this guy could do is he could actually look at what does it cost to take $400,000 out of that property. And if he's only paying 3% money on it, what if he repurposed that money? What if he took $400,000 and went and bought himself 16 single family houses? Because based on the math that I know, he could buy 16 single family houses. He could also buy apartments. I mean, $400,000 is a sweet spot. I also know that in today's day and market, he can get anywhere from like 8 to 30% cash on cash returns, not to mention the equity gross that he will get over time. And if he's doing it right, he'll also capture equity in these properties. So what am I getting at? Well, let's say conservative. Let's go with a real conservative number. Normally, I throw out $350 a month for cash flow. I'm going to go a little more conservative. I'm just going to say this guy could buy properties that threw off $350 a month. And if he had 16 of those properties, that would produce an income stream of $5,600 per month. Now, let's just say for giggles and grins, because I didn't run the numbers, let's just say that money that he borrowed, it cost him, let's go big, let's go $2,000 a month. He would have passive income streams of $3,600 a month just by tapping into the equity that he is allowed to stagnate in that property. Yeah, you heard me correctly. He has stagnant money in that property. Now, I could really blow your mind, and I could back this out, and I could say, okay, let's say he did refinances along the way. And let's say he did it, every 3 years. And every 3 years, he pulled $60,000 out. So in that first three-year period, he bought two houses, and he owned and operated those. At the end of the next three-year period, he refinanced his house again, took more money out of that, maybe another $60,000. Oh, by the way, maybe he sold those properties that he bought 3 years prior. He traded two in for four. Oh, by the way, now he's got $60,000 more, so now he can get two more properties. Now he's at six. At the six-year mark, he's starting to see where I'm going with this. Had this guy known about Lifestyles Unlimited back in the day, had he known what we could teach him, he would not leave that equity in a house that I sold to him 20 years ago untapped. He would be tapping into that money. Now, I'll be honest with you. There's a lot of variables into calculating how much money this guy would have today had he just started 20 years ago. Let's call it 17 years ago. Give him the first 3 years free to actually take money out of that asset and repurpose it. I will tell you this, the returns become exponential because now instead of having six houses at the 6 year mark, you have 14 houses at the 9 year mark. 14. Now remember, I said if he just waited until today, he'd go out and buy 16. He could have had 14 of them 11 years ago. This is the power of real estate. And for you to get started, what you need to do is check us out. Check out our free workshop. Go to lifestylesunlimitedworkshop.com and get yourself registered.
Thank you for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. Join us next time. And until then, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. We'll be right back.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.